CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black, Space Engineering, Space Exploring. However, space tourism is now part of the conversation about commercial space, and therefore, the failure of the submersible Titan. Bob, a very good evening to you. Thank you. How does Titan connect with the space tourism business, which itself has not gotten off to a rollicking start? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, I don't agree about space tourism. We've already had people up in orbit, multiple missions, and there's a real business going on there. But that effort to have tourism in space has inspired a lot of other people to do tourism, cutting edge, pushing the envelope tourism in other places, such as the Antarctic and high altitude balloons, and of course deep sea submersibles. And so what we had is this tragedy in the last week of a deep sea tourism company, OceanGate Expeditions, having its own submersible called Titan go down, take five people and passengers deep underwater to look at the Titanic, and they died. It failed. It somehow failed in the ocean, and they all died instantaneously when the heavy pressure of the deep water crushed the submersible. And so this immediately brings up the question, this kind of high-risk tourism deep in the ocean, how does that impact, or how will or might that impact space tourism, which is an equal, which is a, its own kind of dangerous exploration stuff, and it has the same kind of demographic, or customer demographic, wealthy people who like to do risky things. And so there have been several articles that were posted today, and I decided to post write up my own in context of those articles, asking the same question, how is this going to have an impact in space? And there are differences between the two. The Titan submersible was doing something that's not as heavy regulated as space. Space has got a half a century of very detailed manned space, learning how to do this properly with a somewhat deep regulatory framework for doing it. And a lot of thought goes into that, and there's a strong, robust basis for doing that. And the submersible industry is not anywhere near as robust in that respect. And so that's some of the differences. Space also is, any of this tourism is aimed at eventually building colonies in space. Anyone who goes into deep space, deep sea submersible, then that goal is not a goal. It's not, there's no long-term goals. And the long-term goal encourages the space business to do it well. Well, this happened at a moment when the when Congress is looking at the 2004 Space Commercial Space Amendments Act, because that act created a moratorium on strong regulatory rules for experimental manned spacecraft, and that moratorium was designed to allow the new companies to experiment with a technology that's very new and they don't really know. It's very hard to regulate something strongly when you really don't know much about it. And Congress has extended that moratorium several times. Well, Congress is right now looking at the next extension. And there's concerns now in the space industry that this incident with the Titan is going to encourage Congress to not extend that moratorium. And as I write, it's a mistake. It's a mistake for this moratorium shouldn't have been a moratorium. The regulation itself is probably a mistake. But at least the extension should go on, and it's a concern because the panic and fear-driven culture we live in now could very well act as a steamroller to convince Congress to increase the regulation on commercial space, and we should hope to. And our next few stories indicate the kind of things we're talking about, John.
Dragon's a success for space tourism, but Blue Origin, not much. Virgin Orbit, not much. And the other opportunities, the high sky balloons, have not yet shown what they can do. So I would say there's a hesitation, Bob, except for Dragon, everybody else is not much in the game.
That's partly true, but you got to also remember that before SpaceX and Dragon, the Russians were flying tourism flights pretty regularly for profit, and they were demonstrating that there was demand.
Yes.
There is a demand here. There's no doubt that when people start flying There's going to be an industry and a profit, the tourism industry. The regulatory situation with of this whole industry is important. Like, I have another story here about how the Democrats have proposed and the Republicans have approved in the House Armed Services Committee budget report, to allow the Space Force to increase the fees it charges for launches out of Cape Canaveral and Vandenberg. Charge companies more, commercial companies, a lot more money for the launches. Now, some of this might make sense. There are actual costs that the companies should be picking up. But the nature of the amendments gives Space Force, to a certain extent, a certain carte blanche, and it could act to actually limit launches. And that in itself is an example of where the regulatory framework, the power that Congress and the administrative state have, could act to squelch things here. At the same time, let's talk about another regulation. FAA sets airspace restrictions whenever launches take place at Cape Canaveral and Vandenberg and elsewhere. And after years of the commercial industry trying to convince them that there's no need to have gigantic airspace restrictions that were established back in the 60s, if those large areas are not needed anymore, the rockets are much more reliable and you don't have as much risk. The FAA has finally decided to reduce the airspace restrictions out of some launches out of Cape Canaveral to allow commercial flights to go on, even if a launch is going to take place. And this is an example of where it is a give and take within the regulatory framework, but panic and fear can often end up taking instead of giving, John. That's my fear.
We go to the Biden administration, a success, another signatory of the Artemis Accords. Didn't I also see Ecuador signing, Bob? Was that already in the can?
No, that actually is. This happened almost the same day. Ecuador announced it had signed the Artemis Accords. And let me quickly say, the Artemis Accords was something created by the Trump administration. It was initially designed to get around the restrictions on private enterprise and private property that exist in the Outer Space Treaty. Is basically to try to create bilateral agreements between the U.S. and other nations focused on allowing private enterprise in space. And once you get enough countries signed on, you've got a really strong alliance that can force that issue and protect private property in space. That was the concept. And the Biden administration has continued signing people up, such as Ecuador. Well, this week, a big signatory was announced the same day. India is going to sign the Artemis Accords. This was announced in conjunction with the visit to the United States of India's Prime Minister, Narendra Modi. He was here visiting, talking with Biden, and gave a speech in front of Congress. And they announced that they're going to sign the Outer Space Treaty. And they're doing it in conjunction with increased cooperation and exchange of information and technology with the U.S. itself. We now have 27 countries have signed this. With a question, India is a significant signatory because they have a viable space program, and they've been always very independent and actually, if anything, more aligned with Russia and the communists block in the past. And in recent years, they've gone capitalist and been tried to be independent. The question is, will this signatory help separate them from China and Russia? China, for sure. Russia, it's a question mark. A lot of that technology came from Russia, but they haven't been using any of it recently. There's a problem with India. They're a signatory to the Moon Treaty, which almost no one else has signed, because it essentially bans private enterprise in space and private property. And for this, much more severely than the Outer Space Treaty. And for that reason, almost no one has signed it. Well, the Artemis Accords contradict the Moon Treaty directly. And so I don't know how India is going to handle that. Are they going to make believe that the Moon Treaty doesn't exist? This is very possible, since nobody has signed it practically. It's also possible maybe they're going to pressure the Artemis Alliance. I don't think that's the case, because the Modi administration has been what we would call in the United States very conservative, strongly encouraging private enterprise. So it's an unknown right now how this will affect the Artemis Accords. It does add another very powerful ally within that alliance. In fact, except for China and Russia, almost every major nation in the world has now signed, spacefaring nation.
Ariane 6. Now, the last time I remember Ariane 6, they postponed its final. I don't remember, Bob. I got lost. Ariane 6, is that the viable future for ESA?
It's supposed to be, and maybe not. And this is, we got two stories here that tie together. Ariana 6, what you're kind of remembering, John, is the postponement of the next, of the last launch of Ariana 5. Because of problems, technical problems. Ariana 5 is the older rocket. Ariana 6 is supposed to replace it. Ariana 6 is 3+ years behind schedule. Originally, the plan was to have an overlap between Ariana 5 launches and Ariana 6 launches. Well, European Space Agency has pretty much run out of Ariana 5s, and it doesn't have the Ariana 6 yet on hand. However, they did roll out a test vehicle of Ariana 6 to the launch pad. I got a picture on Behind the Black for engine tests. Yeah, they're going to be testing the engines of the rocket, as well as fueling tests and countdown tests, as well as testing the infrastructure. Structure of the launch pad and everything else. It's not a flight-worthy spacecraft, rocket, but they're doing whatever tests they can because they're desperately trying to get Ariana 6 operational as soon as possible because they don't have a rocket. And this ties us into the next story. Two different European rocket startups. This is PLD Space in Spain and Germany's Rocket Factory Augsburg have now signed deals with France. Not the European Space Agency and not Ariana Space, but France, to use France's old abandoned launch pad in French Guiana for commercial launches. This launch pad hasn't been used since the 70s. It was when France was trying to launch its own Diamant rocket, and it did launch that a few times. And then they formed the European Space Agency, and France decided to do everything through the European Space Agency. France now has signed with these independent private companies to allow them to do launches from their space pad. And that ties into the Ariana 6's delays. It just tells us that Europe increasingly is looking for ways to get around the failures of its own government rocket program. And they're doing it by asking private companies to do it, to act as a customer instead of the builder. And this is a good thing in the long run.
I'm looking at the picture you provide of Ariana 6 at the launch pad. It's a very little rocket. Have I just gotten distorted by SpaceX, the giants? And this,
actually, John, it's just a perspective thing. That's not a small rocket. That rocket is easily as big as Falcon 9. It's just you've got to understand the building to the right is the assembly building that rolls forward and back. It's like a mobile launch tower, and so the building is very big, so that makes the rocket look somewhat squat and small. But this is a big rocket. It's just as big, if not bigger, than the Falcon 9. Of course, it hasn't launched yet, and that's more important than whether it's big or small.
All right, there might be actually good news about Russia. What is it, Bob?
This is a funny story to my mind, John. Russia gets a launch contract. They actually, their state-run agency, Roscosmos, announced that the United Arab Emirates has purchased a launch contract using the Soyuz 2 rocket of Roscosmos to put up one of its satellites. It'll be a secondary payload when the Russians launch a weather satellite later this year, actually only in a few weeks. So this is a very quick deal they put together. They paid for it, and they're going to put a demo CubeSat on this Russian rocket to launch. And for the Russians, this is really kind of a coup. They lost their entire international market when they invaded the Ukraine. They were losing it anyway because they couldn't compete with SpaceX, but it all left them because they because of the invasion, because of the invasion, they confiscated OneWeb satellites and canceled the launch and didn't refund any money, so no one wants to work with them. So for the United Arab Emirates to do this, it brings Russia maybe a little bit back to life in the international launch market.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Rush.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.